Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, September 7th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening in over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Consider taking our 90-hour court access in the common law course. You can find the link on the front page and in the description below. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. You can also join our Bible studies every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern here in the Start Meeting Room. Okay, we're going to start with our scripture reading for the night. Tonight we're going to be looking at Romans chapter 5. Let me see if I can get that open there. Romans chapter 5. Read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. And not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost which is given unto us. For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die. Yet, peradventure for a good man, some would even dare to die. But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, being now justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. For if, when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more, being reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. And not only so, but we also joy in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom we have now received the atonement. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned, for until the law sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over them that had not sinned after the similitude of Adam's transgression, who is the figure of him that was to come. But not as the offense, so also is the free gift. For if through the offense of one many be dead, much more the grace of God and the gift by grace which is by one man, Jesus Christ, hath abounded unto many. And not as it was by one that sinned, so is the gift. For the judgment was by one to condemnation, but the free gift is of many offenses unto justification. For if by one man's offense death reigned by one, much more they which receive abundance of grace and of the gift of righteousness shall reign in life by one, Jesus Christ. Therefore, as by the offense of one judgment came upon all men to condemnation, even so by the righteousness of one the free gift came upon all men unto justification of life. Whereas by one man's disobedience many were made sinners, so by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. Moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound, but where sin abounded, grace did much more abound, that as sin hath reigned unto death, even so might grace reign through righteousness unto eternal life by Jesus Christ our Lord.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
Well, we have the announcement that you sent out already, John, for the indictment and the meeting next Monday on the 14th. Did you put that we're going to start at 8:30 on that?
Yeah, it's not going to take long. We need to try to get 25 people to come. Hopefully people will attend that and come in and make a vote. You know, the statutory process is 23. You know, that, of course, is the maximum usually required. On the common law side, Magna Carta, it's 25. Not that we necessarily need that many people. We need to get a vote. We need to get a vote of 12, 13, 12 if it's 23, and 13 if it's 25. So hopefully we'll get enough people to come. Hopefully the enemy doesn't come, and you know, I haven't heard from them in quite some time. They used to come in here occasionally, and it's been a long time since we've heard from any of those people. So, but anyway, we're going to look at that in a few minutes. Are there any questions, though? Anything else, Jen?
Yes, John. There's one short question and one really long question.
Okay.
The first one is a short one. Has the NLA ever used the quotations from the maxims of law to argue or put forth a case or complaint? Are you guys looking at what Mitch Wexler is doing in Texas with the property tax, and should we do some amicus freeze? Because I went to a bunch of, through a bunch really, of BS from Monmouth County, New Jersey. They just raised my appeal only to get more tax money out of me. Any comment?
Yeah, well, we're not planning to do anything like that. We're focusing in mostly on the court. Not that we wouldn't try to do something other than that, you know, but we don't have any plans for that. I'm not sure who Wexler is. Do you know who Wexler is?
Not familiar with him, no.
We've discussed him a little bit. Wexler, I believe it is, with a V as in Virginia.
Well, it says V-E-X-L-E-R. I don't know. Maybe the guy misspelled it.
Yeah, no, it's Wexler. He's the one, and I brought him up a few times. He's the one who's doing property tax, and he's demonstrating that it's fraud, and he's shown, as we've done in the past, that these people have mailed their taxes on people's property, and so therefore they have committed fraud by mail fraud. And that's just one of his angles. Anyway, we have discussed him before. His stuff is very interesting. I think someone sent us, it might have been LaRonda most recently, something with him, an interview that was being done with him. I only saw a little bit of it, but it was very interesting. So we do know a little bit about him, and I yield.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, well, the main violation ultimately, of course, is a constitutional violation of a direct tax. And obviously logic tells you if you own something and you've already paid tax on that property that you've owned, if they keep taxing you every year, and if you don't pay your tax, they're going to take your home away from you. Obviously, you don't own your home. You're just renting it at best. So, of course, there's lots of cases we could build on this. Not that we're going to win because they refuse to let anyone win. These people have no respect for the people. They don't care about the people. They only care about themselves. They all need to really be thrown out of office. Personally, really, a lot of these people should be in jail. And some of them maybe should be executed for subversion. But, of course, that would require a jury to do that, and whether we'll ever get to a point of that is another question. But, anyway, it is a problem. And how has anybody know what any success that this guy's had on anything on this? I can't see that he would have any success because they'd maintain the status quo.
In this interview, supposedly, they were discussing how he has gotten to the Supreme Court. That was most recently, and he had been discussing it with federal courts prior to, I believe. But he's saying, you know, all of their numbers are fraudulent, and then they go ahead and do the mail fraud by mailing their taxes that people are owing. But he's shown it with empiric data evidence that it's all fraud, top to bottom, the whole thing. They're just making up numbers. Basically what they're doing is they're coming up with a budget for the year, and then they're going out and getting all that money from taxes. This is, I think, what he has shown, and again, I yield.
Okay. All right, well, pretty much everything they seem to do is fraud. Is this the state Supreme Court he's going into, or the U.S. Supreme Court?
I think it's the U.S. Supreme Court. From the most recent thing I saw, again, I think LaRonda sent it.
I'm wondering how he's couching that, because it's kind of hard to go into the federal court to make an argument like that. Denial due process you can come in at because they just come in and take it. They just take it with non-judicial foreclosures, although they do appear as a facade to seem to give you due process, but of course they don't. Yeah, I'd be interested to find out, can anybody get a hold of some papers that he's filed? I'd like to look at that, see once what he has put in. I don't know if anybody's got any contact with him, or if they put it up on the Internet anywhere.
I do not know.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't, but I don't see it in my mail. But it was sent. She sent it to mail. I believe it was LaRonda who did it. And it wasn't that long ago. I don't see it in my folder. I thought I would have saved that. I don't see it. But anywho, if you look in your mail, I think it was just last week that she sent it.
And it came from LaRonda?
I believe it came from LaRonda. If I can find it now, I'll just re-forward it to you and Jan.
I don't recall seeing it. I mean, but that doesn't mean that I didn't get it. I get a lot of mail sometimes, and you kind of go through it quickly trying to get through everything.
Yeah. I think it was LaRonda. I can't be sure. But I'll look for it, and if I find it, I'll forward it to you and Jan.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Jan, or are we done with questions? I think you said
we have this long one, John, if you want to go through it. It's a carryover from last week.
Let's try it. Go ahead.
Okay, this is from Jen in Wisconsin. I discussed divorce case / property dispute with John on last week's open call and received patience and excellent advice. I write this letter seeking further guidance based on his instruction that I file an affidavit with the court. It is now 24 years since my husband's divorce from his first wife, and 15 years since the mortgage on their property was paid off. We have not heard anything from the ex-wife since we filed an abridgment affecting title to real estate in 2021 with her county family court. After receiving the court's approval, we successfully filed the proper papers with the Registry of Deeds and county property listers to convey the property into my husband's name, removing his ex-wife from the deed. In the meantime, the ex-wife lawyer prevailed upon the court to vacate one of the two parcels we had submitted. As luck or grace would have it, the parcel vacated was an initial submission that had a clerical error in it and was subsequently corrected and resubmitted without delay. The ex-wife lawyer thought his work was complete and did not exercise due diligence to realize his oversight. There has been no activity on the case docket since the notice of vacation order in 2021. The original divorce attorney who filed the vacate order died in 2025. The case has idled from summer 2021 to summer 2026. 3 weeks ago, the ex-wife retained a new lawyer and threatened my husband with the slander of title claim and the execution of a default clause from their 2002 divorce that would give him 60 days to vacate his residence on the property and 3 months to remove all his personal belongings. Furthermore, the ex-wife's new legal representative notified us that the divorce default clause will be enacted unless we're willing to accept the wife's fair settlement, which allows my husband to stay on the property until he dies, and he's 66. After that, which time the Homestead Blacksmith Shop first parcel will be liquidated and sold, and the second parcel will be set up as a living trust that divides the land among the four children of his first and second marriages. My question is threefold. First, when I file an affidavit with the court, it will appear on the docket and the ex-wife's lawyers will presumably see it and respond. In the August 16th certified letter from her lawyer, we were given 30 days to accept the ex-wife's fair settlement or face the slander of title claim and the enactment of the 2002 divorce default provision, which they say removes my husband from his home and land. If we choose to file the affidavit, are we required to provide a copy of it to the ex-wife and or her attorney? Will the court notify the petitioner of her action? Now, secondly, I am considering not showing our hand, not filing the affidavit, and thereby not revealing the aforementioned error that her legal representative failed to catch. That leaves us in the know and them in the dark. The ball is in their court, and they will presumably go forward with their threat to bring the slander of title claim and default provision, including something called equitable subrogation, which claims that husband pay more to the ex-wife for her allegation that he did not make all the payments on the mortgage she took out in the final weeks of their marriage. There.
All right, well, in the beginning they mentioned something about 15 years and then another period of time. I'm not too sure I understand completely on that, but it sounds like there must be some statute of limitations on some of these things. And I remember talking last week. I don't remember all the details, but I don't remember. Someone talking?
I don't know if you're in Q&A or not yet.
Yeah, no, we'll do that.
By the way, quick note, it was not LaRonda, it was Yolanda, and I did find it, and I forwarded it to you and Jan. The Supreme Court gets served. Look for that Vexler interview, and I yield.
All right, I'll take a look at that during the week. All right, anyway, I don't recall or remember, and I don't think they do have a lawyer. I would suggest at least talking to a lawyer, someone in, well, actually, there's two types of cases here. You know, we're looking at property on the one hand, so real estate has, of course, something to do here. But it is a divorce thing, so a divorce lawyer might be also the one really to focus in on. There must be some statutes of limitations on this. You did say in the beginning that they went 15 years with silence or another period of time. Do you recall? Well, maybe you can read.
Yeah, it was 15 years since the mortgage on their property was paid off.
Okay, did they say anything about any activity up until now for 15 years? Because I would think that if that's the case, if they've been silent for 15 years, I think statute of limitation.
Well, the divorce decree was 2002.
Okay.
That's way back.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. You know, under common law, of course, there is no such thing as statute of limitation. The only limitation of a court case ultimately is on the ability of having the evidence to survive it. But, of course, this is a long period of time. I really suggest that they talk to a lawyer. I mean, someone, they don't have to necessarily hire someone, but to know the law, to understand whether there's statute of limitations in this case, and get some advice from someone who has a background in that kind of a court case, you know, which of course is a divorce case in this case, and some kind of a settlement there, and then silence and whatever the case may be. So I don't know that I can give anything more than that. you know, this is kind of a specialty situation, and it's been a long time.
Well, then there was one lingering P.S. on here that says, one last lingering question remains, and that is whether I should not engage the family court at all and instead question jurisdiction.
Well, well, again, you know, family court, you can move it into the state court at any given time. That's part of that procedure anyway. So I don't know that I'd go to the point of challenging the jurisdiction of the family court, but you can move it into the state court and for a court decision from that perspective. But again, before I would do anything, you need to find someone who has a background and knowledge in this and find out what the details are on this particular case as far as what can be done, if the statute of limitation, you know, works with this and, you know, whatever information they could get on this. I can't give any more information than that because I, you know, I'm not involved or learned necessarily in divorce. I have done a couple of divorce cases, but they're so simple if people just follow the process. Anybody could do it themselves. They just take your time and read through this information, file out the papers, and file the forms accordingly as time goes on. It's literally a filing of forms. It's just a process of filing forms. You file a form, form's already made up. You just got to fill in the details, all the specifics on the form. And then the other side responds, and then you go to the next form and back and forth, so on and so forth. And then there is a formula for certain things. And I do think the whole system pretty much following the formula, I think, is pretty logical. But once people start to, you know, to hire lawyers in a divorce case, all they're doing is just throwing away their money. You know, they'll always come up with, at the end of the day, as you go through these process of forms, because they try to get everything out of the way in the beginning, then it's a matter of arguments that you might want to argue a point here or a point there. Generally speaking, it usually isn't too many points that need to be argued, because again, most of it is settled by a process that's already set up, a formula. You know, there is a little bit of knowledge that you have to have on certain things, and you know, you can always get an advice from a lawyer that has a background in that, and you just need to know the right questions. And the right questions you would find as you go through the process. And again, anything where it becomes a conflict and an argument, you can have that. You want to kind of set that aside as best you can and just move towards getting everything else done in the process. And again, I get back to the same thing. It's filing forms. They give you all the forms to file. They don't like that you fill out all the forms and file everything in one shot. They like you to do piece by piece, so you follow their process, and that'll be that. You can get it done quite quickly. Anybody going through a divorce, you really got to sit down with your spouse and work things out and make the point. Look at, you know, we go get lawyers, we're both just going to be throwing our money away. And if there is any money here and you're going to push the court for me to pay for it, well, that's going to come out of the money that, you know, that you're expecting to get. And if you can get that agreement, you could move through the case pretty quickly. And as a matter of fact, you can go through the whole trial and set it up without even really getting involved in any arguments within the court. And you can come to an agreement with your spouse between you and yourself and file it in. You know, it's unfortunate that the state tries to get involved with a marriage situation. But on the other hand, I can understand that someone's got to arbitrate things if you don't have people that can even talk to each other or whatever the case may be. So, I don't know. I don't have much more to say on that. Okay, is that it, Jan?
Yes, that's the last one.
Okay. All right, I don't think we're going to get too many people tonight, and hopefully we'll get some more people listening in also on YouTube and Rumble, and we'll see where things go. We have an important announcement to make concerning an indictment. You know, I think we talked about, you know, how we go about the process of putting together the grand jury. I think we talked about that last week or the week before, but I think it was last week. And we went through that process. You know, I might go out there and cut that video or that audio up and put that up onto YouTube and Rumble and available where people can see it that haven't heard it. Or maybe I'll just redo it and be more specific with more details, and I'll do something maybe through a PowerPoint and then create a recording or something. But anyway, we did file our papers with the court system, the Supreme Court, and they very quickly, I can't believe it was like light speed. It was like the day they got it, they sent it back. I mean, we got it back that quickly. And the letter that came with it was a one or two sentences. That was it. What I said, you know, I don't have it in front of me, but maybe I, oh, wait a second, maybe I do have it. Okay, here, two sentences. And their response on September 1st was, the papers again received by the court on September 1st, 2026, are returned for the reasons stated in the court's letter from June 4th, 2026. A copy of that letter is enclosed. And then one more sentence says, the clerk has the authority to reject papers that do not comply with the rules of the court, see Rule 1-1. And again, clearly they didn't read the papers we wrote, or they didn't take it serious, or they just don't care. And I, you know, it's a toss of a coin to figure out what's on these people's mind. I might try to give them a call. We have called them before that we left a message. They never got back to us, and that was on the first paper that they returned. I'm going to try to call them anyway and see once what their thinking is. But again, it depends on where we go with this potential indictment. So right now we have set for a meeting for a potential indictment, okay, against this court clerk. And we're going to be doing that next Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll send out an email with that note, that again, that we're going to do it. We did put it out in the Monday night letter that Jan sends out once a week, usually sends it out on Sunday. And we'll make note on that again on the next letter. So we'll repeat that again there, Jan, the specifics on this case. Also, I'll send something out maybe at the end of the week, maybe on Thursday or Friday, making a note concerning what we're doing here as far as an indictment is concerned and when that potential indictment is going to be. Hopefully, we'll get enough people to come together to be able to do an indictment. So we'll see once where we go with that. The key thing in order to come for this for consideration of an indictment, is that people need to look at the facts of the case. And it should go very quickly. You know, we're not coming together to make any debates or discuss issues and go back and forth and try to change minds or anything of that nature. We're going to all look at the facts, and the facts need to be looked at prior to coming to this, to this potential indictment on next Monday, again at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So everybody should review the facts of the case, think about it, and then come in with a decision whether we should indict or not indict. And it's that simple. We're not a court from the standpoint of coming in as a trial jury to make someone guilty or not guilty. We're just making the fact and the point that there's enough evidence that it should go to trial. And that's all a grand jury does. So we don't have to try to convince each other and debate the issues or so on and so forth. You know, when you're listening to witnesses, and if you're if you're in a grand jury where you have available witnesses coming, questions could be asked, of course, to the witnesses from the grand jury. Whatever evidence is put forth by whoever's leading it, usually it is, unfortunately, a bar attorney that's leading it, where it really should be a sheriff or a coroner. It should not be necessarily a bar attorney, a prosecutor pushing forward. That's something that they've changed some time ago in our system. It's not the way the system normally works. But in any event, they come in, the individual bringing the charges, let's work from the common law perspective. Let's say the sheriff's coming in, bringing charges against an individual, reads out, gives out the information to the charges, might pull some witnesses up, and they may ask questions and so on and so forth. And then, of course, as those questions are asked, the jury has the opportunity, anybody in the jury has the opportunity to pose a question to the witness or the person that's being charged with something, if that person is available. More often than not, that person is not necessarily there. But there are occasions where they are there. So it's really, again, a matter of looking at the facts, making a decision, saying, yeah, I think a law has been broken here, and it needs to go in for a jury trial for the people to decide, where they now dig down and look into the each and every fact. So anyway, it is going to be a pretty simple case. The key thing of this case is reading the indictment and reading the papers, the letters that the clerk has sent. There are two letters. We have read the presentment that was being forwarded to the Supreme Court, to the justices, and it's the cover letter to the clerk that should be read, and particularly the indictment that, of course, we're going to look at the indictment tonight. We'll read through it, and people can go up and read it again. We do have a copy of that for anybody that's coming in on a app or browser. You can see that our desktop, and on the desktop we have close to the very top of our front page, it says Grand Jury Presentment to the U.S. Supreme Court. So you can click on and read the presentment to SCOTUS. That in itself is not necessary to read, although most people that have been coming here have heard it read, because we did read it live. We did post it up online, and we posted it as just a reading, and also it was posted in a Monday night meeting a couple of, it's a while back, quite a few weeks ago. Now, the cover letter to the clerk is an important letter because it lays out the point or the position concerning why they need to file it. And let me make sure that this is the right cover letter to the clerk. Let's see. Yeah, this is the right one. Okay, this should be read. People should read this letter before coming to the meeting. Hopefully everyone here and others will come to the potential indictment meeting. And let me repeat that. A few people have come in since. So that's going to be on next Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, right here in this room, and we will take a vote on an indictment or no indictment. There are people that listen in on YouTube and Rumble, and hopefully there some of those people will come. And actually, anyone could come, so it's not restricted to any specific group of people. And we have a good, I can't think of the word to say this, but in any event, we get people from a lot of different states, of course. So we have a good broad group of people from different states, and that's, of course, what we need. So again, people should read this letter on our front page. Let me go back and just make the note. Cover letter to the clerk, and then the indictment against the U.S. Supreme Court. Did we read that cover letter, Jan? Do you recall, or Terry, or Eric? Did we recall whether we read that letter, the cover letter?
We were thinking about it, but I don't think we did.
Okay. Well, it's not that long. Maybe we'll read it tonight. But right now, the important thing is reading the indictment. So that's what we're going to do right now. And again, anybody here listening into this, then you don't necessarily have to go read it because you're going to hear it. But, of course, you can go back and up here and read it, and you can make a copy of it. I will, if we get the indictment through, which we'll take, we'll take a vote on that, and if we get the indictment through, and I would think we should get it through, but we'll see what happens, then I will post the indictment also up on the Internet on its own. and also point to, you know, I'll do the video that I'm going to play right now. I did a PowerPoint earlier today, so I put it into a video form, so we'll just play the video. So it'll be read out through the video. And again, I'm not going to post that until after we come to the consideration. And if we consider the indictment, then I will post it up on both Rumble and YouTube and make reference, of course, back to the presentment and the cover letter to the clerk. Also, the other two letters that should be looked at are the one I just read, which it looks like I didn't post that, and also the first letter, which was one paragraph, and I don't think I posted that either. I don't see that. Oh, yeah, no, I don't see that. So I'm going to post those two letters, we'll see where we go. Maybe we'll read the other one. It's one paragraph. So, okay, let's do this here. Let me close something here. Okay, here is the indictment. It's an MP4 that I made of the indictment. And again, it's just a reading of the indictment papers that you get a copy of right here on the front page. This is an indictment filed by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We, the people, via the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, have been providentially entrusted via natural law to dispense justice and were provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary and our representatives. We, the people, have the unbridled right to impanel our own grand juries and present true bills of information, indictments, and presentments to a court of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding. U.S. versus Williams. We, the people, against Clerk Robert Meek of the Supreme Court of the United States. Grand jury indictment filed with Attorney General Todd Blanche. William Blackstone, a legal maxim. Every right, when withheld, must have a remedy, and every injury its proper redress. In the third volume of his commentaries, page 23, Blackstone states two cases in which a remedy is afforded by mere operation of law. In all other cases, he says, it is general and indisputable rule that where there is a legal right, there is also a legal remedy by suit or action at law whenever that right is invaded. And afterwards, page 109 of the same volume, he says, I am next to consider such injuries as the cognizable by the court of common law. And herein, I shall for the present only remark that all possible injuries, whatsoever they that did not fall within the exclusive cognizance of either the ecclesiastical, military, or maritime tribunals, are for that very reason within the cognizance of the common law courts of justice. For it is a settled and inveritable principle in the laws of England that every right, when withheld, must have a remedy, and every injury its proper redress. Marbury versus Madison. Because our justice courts of common law and their common law rules have been allegedly abrogated by the 1934 Rules Enabling Act and replaced with civil law and its repugnant rules, we find it necessary to declare the following facts. Whereas the American Bar Association's education monopoly that has an iron grip on our courts has blinded ABA-taught lawyers to the natural law and taught that we are under Roman civil law. Black's Law states civil law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. That rule of action which every a particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established peculiarly for itself, more properly called municipality law, to distinguish it from the law of nature and from international law. Whereas the Declaration of Independence, the foundation of American law, clearly declared that we are under the laws of nature and of nature's God, that is, the Judeo-Christian God. Isaiah 44, verses 6 through 8. Thus saith Jehovah, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, Jehovah of hosts, I am the first, I am the last, and beside me there is no God. And who as I shall call and shall declare it, and set it in order for me, since I appointed the ancient people? And the things that are coming and shall come, let them show unto them, fear ye not, neither be afraid. Have not I told thee from that time, and hath declared it? Ye are even my witnesses. Is there a God beside me? Yea, there is no God. I know not any. Whereas we the people have been cast out of our own courts, and are being denied natural law and access to the people's courthouse, to be under judicial auspices, thereby forcing us to gather in a tent outside our courts, so to speak. Whereas grand juries under judicial auspices are statutory, controlled by the bar through their well-trained esquires, and therefore are not free and independent, and are ignorant of their sovereignty, and are thereby steered to the will of the state. This is the epitome of jury tampering. We read in the United States versus Williams, 1992, Justice Anton Scalia writing for the majority, the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. Because the grand jury is an institution separated from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside, we think it clear that as a general matter at least, no such supervisory judicial authority exists, and that the disclosure rule applied here exceeds the Tenth Circuit's authority. Rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury has generally been confined to the constitutive one of calling the grand jury together and administering their oaths of office. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident both in the scope and its power to investigate criminal wrongdoing, and in the manner in which that power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants assurance that it is not. It need not identify the offender it suspects, or even the precise nature of the offense it is investigating. The grand jury requires no authorization from its constituted court to initiate an investigation, nor does the prosecutor require leave of court to seek a grand jury indictment. And in its duty, in its day-to-day functioning, the grand jury generally operates without the interference of a presiding judge. It swears in its own witnesses and deliberates in total secrecy. Recognizing this tradition of the independence, we have said that the Fifth Amendment's constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge. There can be no legal right to resist the oppressions of the government unless there be some legal tribunal other than the government, and wholly independent of and above the government, to judge between the government and those who resist its oppressions. The authority to judge what are the powers of the government and what are the liberties of the people must necessarily be vested in one or the other of the parties themselves, the government or the people. because there is no third party to whom it can be entrusted. If the authority be vested in the government is absolute, and the people have no liberties except such as the government sees fit to indulge them with. Lysander Spooner, An Essay on a Trial by Jury, 1852. Comes now the constituted, unified United States common law grand jury to bring an indictment against Clerk Robert Meek for twice unlawfully blocking the grand jury's presentment concerning treason to be brought before the United States Supreme Court justices. That is incumbent upon both we the people and the clerk, Robert Meek, under both natural law and 18 U.S.C. subsection 2382. See copy of said presentment addressed to all nine justices individually and a cover letter to Clerk Robert Meek attached. The common law grand jury charges that, number one, on two occasions, Clerk Robert Meek unlawfully and knowingly prevented and thereby concealed the grand jury's presentment concerning treason from reaching the justices of the United States Court. See letter from the clerk dated June 4th, 2026 and September 1st, 2026, attached, in violation of 18 U.S.C. 2382, which states, whoever owing allegiance to the United States and having knowledge of the commission of any treason against them, conceals and does not as soon as may be disclosed and make known the same to the President or some judge of the United States, or to the governor, or to some judge or justice of a particular state, is guilty of misprision of treason, and shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 7 years or both. Two, Clerk Robert Meek unlawfully and knowingly blocked and willfully refuses to forward the grand jury's petition for redress of grievance, which is a First Amendment right that cannot be abridged by rule or statute. No government has the authority to oppose, directly or indirectly, the exercise of a right, as it is clearly stated in Miranda v. Arizona. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Joseph Story's Commentaries, 1886 to 1888, which states, the remaining clause secures the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. This would seem unnecessary to be expressly provided for a Republican government, since it results from the very nature of its structure and institutions. It is impossible that it could be practically denied. Additionally, on August 5, 2026, Chief Justice Roberts restored the Supreme Court's independence from Congress by giving its clerks notice that the First Amendment includes the right to petition. 3. Clerk Robert Meek unlawfully and knowingly blocked and removed the grand jury's First Amendment petition in the form of presentment concerning treason in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2076, which states, whoever being a clerk of a district court of the United States willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. 4. Clerk Robert Meek, owing allegiance to the United States, unlawfully and knowingly gave aid and comfort to the enemy, warring against the Constitution and the people in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2381, which states, whoever owing allegiance to the United States levies war against them or adheres to the enemy, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under this title but not less than $10,000 and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. 5. Clerk Robert Meek unlawfully and knowingly blocked and willfully refuses to forward a document as required by law in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 76, which states, whoever being a clerk of a district court of the United States willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. 6. Clerk Robert Meek unlawfully and knowingly blocked and willfully removed a presentment filed with Clerk Robert Meek in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2071, which states, whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys, or attempts to do so, or with the intent to do so, takes and carries away any record, proceeding, map, book, paper, document, or other thing filed or deposited with the clerk or officer of the court of the United States, or in any public office, or with any judicial or public officer of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. Whoever having the custody of any such records, proceedings, map, books, documents, papers, or other things willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, falsifies, or destroys the same shall be fined under this title and imprisoned not more than 3 years or both, and shall forfeit his office and be disqualified from any office under the United States. As used in this subsection, the term office does not include the office held by any person as a retired officer of the armed forces of the United States. We, the people, gave every opportunity to Clerk Robert Meek to obey the law by filing twice and offered that if any clerk or justice believes we are wrong in the law or that rules can abrogate rights, he or she may submit affidavit sworn under penalty or perjury and postmarked within 10 days of receipt of this remonstrance, showing the constitutional provisions or fundamental principles of law authorizing constitutional rights to be abrogated by rules or by tactic acquiescence. Each justice of the Supreme Court agrees that all written herein is true, and that each time hereafter, that a clerk rejects a petition, it shall stand as each justice has denied the right to petition with full knowledge, malice, and intent to perform maladministration in breach of the public trust of the Constitution, and that each of the justices perform an official act contrary to their oath and to deny justice. This is sent to you in the peace and love of Jesus Christ, so that this court continues its good faith restoration of original law and fundamental forms. Clerk Robert Meek denied this opportunity. Therefore, the common law grand jury, being the sureties of the peace, charged the defendant with the aforesaid 6 counts. A true bill, grand jury met on February 14, 2026, and decided for a true bill against Robert Meek. Grand jury foreman. A free and independent grand jury needs no co-signature from an American Bar Association. Trump versus the United States. There is no immunity for an unofficial act. Okay. All right. We did put a date on that, of course, and a signature. But again, that's not going to go out to anybody unless we get an indictment. And we have to have at least 12 to 13 people, 12 if we're going to go off of the statutory process, and 13 if we're going to go off common law. Let me think if that's correct. Let me rethink that a minute. 12 and 13. Yeah, because they say it's 23, but the Magna Carta says it's 25. So, but we'll take either or. Hopefully we'll get enough people to come to this potential indictment, and we'll make a vote on this. I want everybody to understand that this is, it's required that this is being done without putting anyone's names out there. It's all done in secrecy. Every grand jury meets in secrecy. No names are ever released to anybody under any circumstances. It's against the law for the government to try to seek the names of anybody within a grand jury. Now, it is kind of unfortunate in the sense that they kind of have the names. If you are in a court and you're going through the process, they already got those names in the record. And that's a little scary concerning the government that we have here today. But I'm not aware of any cases, not that there hasn't been, where the anybody has gone out after a grand jury from within the court system. But for, as for us is concerned, you know, we are not operating inside of a court. We're operating outside of the court in a tent, so to speak, because they have blocked us from coming into our own courts. They have prevented us from coming into our courts of justice. They prevent to open these courts of justice. And that's what this case is all about. So it's extremely important that people participate with this and come and meet with us on next Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room. And for anybody hearing us on YouTube, let me think about this a minute. Well, anybody listening to this on YouTube, when we talk about the fact that we're going to be holding this grand jury, they can come. Anybody is welcome to come to this potential indictment, meeting for an indictment. And it should be very short. Like I said, we'll start at 8:30. It shouldn't run much longer than just to take a vote. In 10 minutes, we'll be done. We'll close down and reopen back up at 9 p.m. Or a few minutes before 9 p.m. For our regular Monday night meeting. And we'll take it from there. And again, if we do get an indictment, then I will post this up on YouTube, on Rumble, and I'll post it up on X. And I'll make a reference to the actual presentment that went in, hopefully to be able to get more people to look at these things, get more involved, participate and support the work that we're doing here, and potentially learn how to have government by consent by building their committees of safety within their communities, within their counties, and go from there. I'm going to open up the queue in a couple of minutes. I think I saw one person in the queue. Let me see if there's anybody in the queue. Oh, we got two people in the queue. We're going to open up the queue in a couple of minutes. But before we do that, this is a very short letter. I'm going to read this. This is the first letter, which these two letters, I read one before we read this paper, and I'm going to read the second letter, which is really the first letter that was sent to us on June 4th when they first returned our paperwork. And then they referenced back the same thing. Apparently, they didn't read our papers at all. From the day we sent it and the day we received it back was 6 days. We sent it out on the 26th, and we received it back on the 1st. So that went very, very quickly. And you can tell by the letter that they didn't read it because we made clear that what they think this paper is, it is not. And this is the paper that they wrote, which we said it is not. And it's addressed to the grand jury concerning the grand jury presentment to the United States Supreme Court. It says here, the papers were received on June 4, 2026. These papers fail to comply with the rules of this court and are herewith returned. And again, that's a violation of the First Amendment because this is not a court case. You may seek review of a decision only by filing timely petition for writ of certiorari. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. The papers you submitted are not construed to be a petition for writ of certiorari. Should you choose to file a petition for a writ, you must submit the petition within 90 days, time limit allowed under Rule 13 of the rules of this court. A copy of the rules of this court and a sample petition for a writ are enclosed. Your case must first be reviewed by the United States Court of Appeals or by the highest state court. You see, they're treating this like a court case. It's not a court case. So your case must first be reviewed by the United States Court of Appeals or by the highest state court in which a decision could be had. The original jurisdiction of this court does not extend to suits by an individual against a state. And the original jurisdiction of this court generally extends only to cases of controversies between two or more states or between the United States and one or more states. See Rule 17 of the rules of this court. The 11th Amendment amends the language of the Constitution and holds that the judicial power of the United States does not extend to any suit commenced or prosecuted against the state or by a citizen of another state. The Supreme Court has subsequently held numerous times that states cannot be sued without their consent and that the 11th Amendment bars suits brought against the state of citizen by citizens of this of that state. And then it's signed by Clerk Scott Harris through Robert Meek. Scott Harris is really the main clerk, and the other ones are clerks that work for Harris. I believe the court clerks, well, I'm pretty sure that the main court clerk is probably chosen by the Supreme Court justices. I would imagine that that is the case. I'm not sure which one it is. But again, everything in this letter has nothing to do with the papers we filed. We're filing a report required by law reporting that there is subversion. Now, we're setting this out to Trump and his administration. We're going to wait to see if we get an indictment first, and then we're going to send copies out to all of those individuals. You know, there's about 30 of them altogether. We recently added another congressman, so we'll be sending it out to all of them, all of the paperwork. And on that paperwork, we're going to make the note that this is also a notice concerning the same presentment concerning subversion, so that the president is on notice and his administration is on notice, and now the courts are on notice. We need to continue pushing this issue in order to get our courts of record opened up, courts of justice, because, again, they have closed them a long time ago. Okay, with that, like I said, that letter to Trump and his administration, we'll probably read that next week, and we'll see once where we go. So with that, we'll open up for questions in the queue. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. If you're on an app or browser, should be a button to get into the queue. So let's see what we have here. Again, we have two people. We have Linda from Virginia. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Linda.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Always have that mute button on and forget to take it off. I'm just calling to give an update on my HVAC predator situation. I served the verified notice and demand that I went by the NLA's file copy or whatever. I gave them 30 days, and I received no response in 30 days. So I was preparing the notice of default, and at 90 days out, I received a message stating they were reviewing the demand letter. And I have read other comments from other people saying this is their, you know, their modus, where they say they're reviewing it and then there's no follow-up. So I continue to try to, you know, work on the default. And then I received another message requesting information for one of the 14. I listed 14 predatory practices and violations in the demand letter. And they were coming and asking me about one of them without responding to the demand letter, you know, in total or whatever. I'm sorry?
What question were they asking? You said one of 14 charges. What charge were they asking concerning information about?
One of them I put in there was problems with the install. There were code violations. There was the system is inefficient. There's issues with something with the permit, which I don't even know about yet. I haven't had time to check into.
All you got to do is to the to the town over there to the inspector and find out if there was a problem with the permit, what that was about.
Yeah, I need to make it over there and see what they have.
Let me just ask. Well, before you go any further, because I want to ask a question about some of the things you said already. All right, you filed the papers, you gave them 30 days, and that 30 mm-hmm. days expired. How many more days beyond the 30 days has expired? Just 30 or 35?
It was 90 days before I received.
Okay, so let's go back. Hold on. You got a 30-day, you gave them 30 days, and you waited as long as 90 days, and then finally they responded and they wanted information, correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
I served them, and
I would do is this: you're trying to stay out of court, you're trying to put them under stress so that they will deal with you and just finish this problem, okay? And they already know what you're asking for because you put it into the notice and demand, or what you're demanding. Give them what they're asking for and let it be known. I'd give them another 20 days. I mean, and that's very, very graceful. I mean, you could probably give them 5 days, but I'd give them 20 days. Be graceful. Because if you do have to go to court, the court would appreciate that you've been very... Before you add anything more, let me just finish what's in my mind about what you've already said. Then you could tell me more info. So you give them, I would suggest, 20 days, okay? You give them the information they're asking for whatever information you have. Definitely take a trip down to see the inspector, the town in the town, village, or city, or wherever you're at. Go down and see the inspector and find out if there is a violation, what the violation is, and get a copy of that so you can mail that with it. And if there is no violation, then you want to make note and correct your paper saying you went down and there was no violation. Okay, once you do that, you're giving them 15 days, and after 15 days, you're moving for a default judgment in a court of law, which would be the state court. You want to go into a state court. And then wait the 15 days. You see, you're trying really...
Okay, well, let me just add a little bit more here. I had read a few times about ChatGPT. And I finally, somebody mentioned it again, and I said, you know what, I'm going to try ChatGPT for this default notice. And let me tell you, I was blown away. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, you mentioned it in a letter I think I saw you sent.
What it came up with was just amazing. And it covered things I hadn't even thought of. It just was amazing. I had to upload the verified notice and demand and the email messages that they sent. And then I also eventually uploaded the contracts where it has the forged signatures on it. And I guess it's going to get to that. But at the time, I wanted to get the default notice out. So it did the default notice. It did it as a notice of default, failure to cure, and reservation of rights. And it covers all of that. It's 7 pages.
Well, let me, here's something you could do also. Again, I use Grok. I just recently went out to look at, what do they call it, GP something or other, which is another AI.
ChatGPT is what I used.
I looked at that and I didn't sign up because I was a little nervous, Microsoft was mentioned in there with Google and some of the...
Yeah, that's another aspect of it.
Well, let me just tell you.
Let me tell you something. Basically, the same reason I am in this situation in the first place,
right, Linda,
are the same people.
All right, Linda, hang on a second. Yeah, I got to mute you for a second. Look, we have to have a two-way communication. And when I'm talking, you got to wait till I finish. And, again, I want to give some information. And it's not just you that's learning from this. It's anybody else that's listening also. But I want to get some information, get some communication going. Then you go to the next point. You can make, and we could talk some more. But when you pile a lot of things up on top of me, I'm going to forget some of the things, or I'm not going to be able to address them, whatever the case may be. I'm trying to address every issue here, okay? So I'm going to unmute you, but let me just finish talking here. And this is important. This is for really everyone else, not just me. I was going to go out and join that particular chat also. I've joined up to Grok, and that's on X. And I felt comfortable with that because Musk is a pretty decent guy to a major degree, as best you can tell anyway. But I will say something about Grok, and I'll say something about any other AI. You got to remember it's going to give you status quo information. The information you're asking for and they're giving you is good, solid information because it's not necessarily anything that you're worried about being, something that's going to come out with the status quo information, like if you ask questions about common law and so on and so forth. Now, I know with Grok, for instance, you might be able to do with the same thing that you're going through. You already done this, but you might want to do it again just to see what it gives you. So for educational purposes, you could take your notice and demand that you've given, that you sent out already, and you can put that into your AI and ask them to rewrite this in a better way, giving me information on anything that I might have missed that they should have in here. And you'll probably get some good results from that. Again, it is status quo, but in this area, it's not going to hurt you. It's going to be helpful. I use these AIs, again, I say with Grok only. I use Grok, the AI, for all kinds of things, car repairs, I mean, anything you could think of. Trying to find a phone number that I can't find, Grok will find it for me. A lot of people, places we try to do business with or whatever, even different agencies, they hide their phone numbers. And no matter you're all over the internet looking for them, and you can't. But you go to Grok and you ask, pop, they give it to you. They find it. So anyway, it's really good for that stuff, and it's good for people to know and understand that. So, but go ahead. Do you have another point you wanted to make?
Yeah, absolutely. You said to go ahead and give them the information. They are not acting in good faith. Okay. I have read several from several other people, mainly in the solar industry, because those are the victims that suffered first. But what they say is, what they'll do is that's what they do. They bring up one thing, and with them, typically it was efficiency of the system. Okay, so then what they do is they ask you for expert assessments, reports, photos, technical documents or whatever. And what happens is they run you down that road and get you all wrapped up with that and get you all distracted with that. And it never gets back to the other 14 predatory practices, like the criminal practices. So that's the problem with that.
They have a question on one. Look, they may be not be acting in good faith, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be acting in good faith. You have to always, and by acting in good faith and giving them that more grace time, okay, here's the key thing. When you go into the court, you're not really looking to go into the court for a trial or anything. You're looking to move for a summary judgment on the facts, okay? And when they when they don't answer these questions that you've given them and they have not responded to them, that's fine. That's called acquiescence. They've acquiesced. And so papers are going to be going into a court to acquiesce, that they had acquiesced, and therefore you move in the court for a summary judgment on the case. Now, when the judge looks at all these things before, and you're going to want to, of course, if they doesn't give me a summary judgment, then, of course, you want to go for a court of record. But you give the opportunity of the judge to give you a summary judgment. And when the judge looks at this, this is not a status quo case. It's a company that is off on its own to begin with. You're a person that's being injured by this company, and you're just looking for justice. And when they read through the papers, they've seen what you've done. They've seen that you were graceful. They've seen that you acted in good faith and that they had not acted in good faith, that they're pushing you along and going on. That's fine. See, this is all good for you for the judge. Okay, because you're pushing for a summary judgment. A summary judgment is given when someone acquiesces to begin with, or the other side answers in such a way that they actually incriminate themselves, and the facts on that are on the paper prove the case,
well,
and there's to go to court, and you push for that summary judgment. So push that way first. Give them the opportunity.
I get that the court is going to be looking for, you know, if here's the thing, if I don't do it, then the court is going to give them more time and more allowance and all that.
No, you don't want them to have more time. You've already given them. Okay, let me explain how it actually really works, even though they screw the system up so bad. When you go into court, the way it's supposed to work, and unfortunately these lawyers, they push around the whole system and they try to throw you out of court and they play all these stupid games. But the way it's supposed to work, okay, is that when you file a paper and you file it into the court, okay, the other side is supposed to respond to that. And you're going back and forth in paperwork with the other side, making your argument, getting everything together, okay? And it's not necessary for you to go into a courtroom. It's not necessary for them to call for a hearing or any of those things until you come to a certain point of the case, all right? So you've already done that, and they've acquiesced. Just because you didn't file it into the court, you've done it in an appropriate way, a lawful way, a judicial way. You filed it appropriately, you served it on them, you've got proof of that serving, you've done it by affidavit form, you've done it in good faith, you made the point, if they're not going to do this, they're not going to do that, within a certain amount of days, you will decide for them. You've done all those things, okay? And there's a good chance, because, again, it's not a status quo case. It's not some big, huge, major corporation that has some kind of clout with the government because it funds them with money and so on and so forth. So there's no special favors here on this case. And a judge, in all likelihood, is going to give you the default judgment, okay?
These are Wall Street companies.
It doesn't matter, though.
They're private equity. They're huge. They're huge companies.
It doesn't matter necessarily. It depends on other things. You know, again, if they're politically involved, they got some political clout, and they push some politician to put some pressure or something of that nature, or it comes up before the judge where the judge already knows he's got to rule a certain way because it's the stage has been set for a status quo, situation here. I don't see this as a status quo situation. I do believe you're going to get justice on this. You just do it the right way and move to the next step when you have to. Okay.
Okay. Well, let me. In the default notice, it gave them 10 days. It gave them another 10 days. See, I'm just one person, though. I can't go see about the permit and all that and do the deal.
All right, listen, I have to mute you again just for a second. I'm going to unmute you. You got to listen because I don't understand the timing of what you just said, and I need to understand that before you continue giving me any more information. I have no place to put it in my brain, okay? So let's look at the timing, all right? I'm going to unmute you. Let's look at the timing. You filed your notice and demand, okay? You gave them X amount of days. Now you filed a default, you said, right? How long after...
Right.
To the 30 days that you filed the default? Just answer that question because I have a few questions and then you can pick up from there. So how many days?
Well, after their emails, it was 90 days.
Well, okay.
Or,
now,
or before, when they responded, it was at 90 days.
When did they first answer?
Okay. They were served the demand notice in April, mid-April. The 30 days would have been mid-May. The first response was 8th of July.
Okay, so they've already defaulted.
And 10 days later was their request for the one thing.
Okay, well, look at what you're trying to do is to move into a court to get a decision quickly. You're not, you got to give it the opportunity. Okay, and the grace to say, tell them, look, you've already defaulted, you were given 30 days, you responded back, April, then to May, and then June, July. You responded 2 or 3 months later, okay, by email, you said, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything's in writing, everything.
Right, hold on. Let me go through this from what I understand, and then we'll go to the next point, all right? So... You've given them, you make the point, you send them a letter that says, look, I filed this on such a date. And then you were given 30 days to respond. You didn't respond till 90 days later. And you didn't respond by mail. You responded by email. And let it be known, don't ever talk to me again by email or by phone. You write me a letter, and I want it notarized. I want it certain.
Well, I think they consider email writing in writing. It's never been a problem anyway.
Yeah, you got to prove it. No, they can decide whatever they want. It doesn't make it so. Okay, the law requires writing in a paper, and anything that has any clout has to be in an affidavit form. And nothing is being done in an affidavit form. It's just an email. Okay, so forget all that. You don't want a phone call. You don't want email. They're going to respond back to you within 10 days because that's what you're going to give them, 10 or 15 days. You need to respond back to me in writing, and you want it notarized. You want them to swear to it, whatever their answers are. So you write them the letter. You say you've already defaulted. You give them the dates, and then you say now you want more things. You're responding to me by email. I want from this point forward, you need to respond to me through the mail, regular mail, in affidavit form, answering the questions answering the charges that I put against you. I'm going to give you 15 days to do so, after which I will move for judgment in a court of law.
Okay, all of that you mentioned was covered by the ChatGPT. I'm telling you, it was more than covered.
Okay.
All that, the 90 days, the...
Follow it. But remember, you're giving them a little more grace. It's going to go a long way in front of a judge, you know, as long as there's nobody in the back. I sued some guy that I was doing work for, and he was an accountant. Turned out, I found out later, he was an accountant for the judge also. He was his accountant, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So that judge must have had other business going on. So they knew each other. That never should have happened, okay? I lost the case. I scratched my head, didn't understand why I lost the case. And I had a lawyer back then because I didn't know the law back then. Kind of scratched my head, so did the lawyer, until I found out why and how. And I just didn't pursue it because it just wasn't worth it, spending all the money going in to try to win a case, that I'd lose more probably than what I would get, and so on and so forth. But the point is, you have a judge.
Do you know that I just found out that the AGs, the state AGs, are basically, they receive like millions of dollars from these predators, you know? So they're not gonna protect the people.
Again,
they're filing lame cases, the AGs. These lame cases.
Okay, look it. I hear what you're saying. They're crooked. And I wouldn't say all of them are doing that, but some of them are.
Yeah, but it's a matter of where your allegiance is, and if somebody's giving you millions of dollars,
but
your
if you
allegiance
have a solid case, and there's really no status quo requirement here by the judge. Okay, they're going to, I think, in the right way, and they're going to not waste the time of the court to take it into the court. They'll make a decision and give you what you're asking for. After all, they acquiesced. You gave them more time. They acquiesced again. They didn't answer any of your questions. That's it. Judgment. I want a judgment. And again, and if that judge doesn't give it to you, then you go through the appeal. All right?
And let me tell you something. I thank God I canceled that contract when I did, because it was within their specified time frame. So that's what I'm battling with. I canceled the contract, told them to remove the system, and they will not. They keep saying they will remove it. They wanted me to sign a non-disclosure and hold harmless agreement, and I went back and I said, no, you don't have any standing to ask me to sign a non-disclosure and hold harmless agreement.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that was a good point. But again, you need to move in a way and make your next, you look at, you need to make your decision in your brain what you're going to do now. You've got everything done. You give them that extra 10 days or 15 days to finish the response and a demand to answer your notice and demand in affidavit form, and you give them the information that they ask for, because you're giving them grace. You're very graceful to them. But at the end of the day, it's 15 days. On day 16, I'd go file it in a court. Now, remember, 15 days, you got to, if you're going to give them 15 days, that counts from the day that they received it to the day and it mailed it. So it may take 2 days to get to you. It may take 2 days to get to them. So those 15 days becomes 19 to 20 days. And if you
It's certified mail, so I'll be waiting for the green cards to come back.
You'll do it through the certified mail. You'll know exactly the day that they received it. And then when you get it, there should be a postmark on it, okay? And you'll know the day that they sent it out and when they got it. But you got to give it a couple of days beyond that 15-day mark to give them to go through the mail. And that's it. There's no more discussion. I don't even know why you bother yourself anymore. Now it's time to move for summary judgment, period. End of
subject. Well, in the meantime, I am going to go down and check on the permit and try to do all that,
you need to give them that just in case I need it. You need to give them that information because it's wrong that you don't. Look at, maybe they're not acting in good faith.
Well, I will when I get it. I don't have it.
I know. I'm just saying. We'll go down. You should go down tomorrow, the next day, if you can, and get it. It only takes you, whatever time it takes to get there. It shouldn't take you any more than 20 minutes or half hour to see the inspector. You might want to call to make sure he's in the office, okay? And you might even be able to do it by phone, too. So you go down there and you just get the information that you need. If there's any information to give, respond, set it up, and then go to court. Just file a summary judgment in court. Now, when you file for a summary judgment, I think you said you'd taken the course, right?
No, I've represented myself, though, in court.
Okay, make sure you file for summary judgment properly, because if you don't file properly, it's going to be just thrown out. Okay, so you file for.
I'll probably ask the AI to do it.
Well, again, I wouldn't depend too much on AI. You can depend a lot. You have to have a summons to summons them in, so it has to be a summons on the copy. On top of that, everything has to be an affidavit form. Okay, you don't ask the court. You move the court for summary judgment. Now AI can.
You have to file a complaint. And then,
No, you don't. You're not listening. I've said this 10 times to you over the times we've been talking. You're not moving into court to go to fight a court case. The court case is over. You are moving because they acquiesced. You're moving the court. You're filing into the court to move the court for summary judgment, and you lay out your case on everything that you've done. And you got to focus mostly on the fact that they don't respond. You have to give them the copy of your notice and demand. You got to make the point that they didn't do these things. And you got to give that affidavit of the situation that's taken place point by point by point. Only say what's necessary, just the facts. And in those points, you'll show that they haven't been acting in good faith. You have been acting in good faith. You've been very graceful. You don't have to say those things. That should be seen. And that's why a judge will probably very quickly give it. Now, the judge may turn around and say, I'm going to give these people 30 days to respond and so on and so forth and see once we're
right
before they make the decision. But you have to object to that and move the court for summary judgment. They have acquiesced. They refuse. They have acquiesced. They have not acted in good faith. You've given them chance after chance after chance after chance. And they haven't done the right thing. So, all right. Anyway, you got a final statement?
Let me say one last thing. It's apart from my case, but how desperate are these Wall Street private equity finance firms that they have to buy up concentrations of homeowner services? I mean, they must be really desperate.
When you say
so
buy...
Far, so far,
tell
so
me
far
what
they
buy up.
So far they've bought up sectors of HVAC, roofing, solar, water filtration, and I just read an article that KKR, listen to this. KKR just bought up garage doors for $2 billion.
Okay. They're building businesses. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, they're building monopolies.
Well, you can say it's a monopoly. It's not a monopoly. They're building a conglomerate, but they're not building a monopoly. Are they the only ones selling garage doors?
That's what happens.
No,
they go in.
No, they're
listen
about
to what they do. They go in and they buy up all the local businesses. They buy them all up.
No.
They retire. The owners retire, and they buy them all up.
It's not true. They can't get everybody. There's plenty of contractors around you that'll come in and put in a garage door. You can go to Home Depot or Lowe's. They'll sell you the garage door and they'll install it for you. They'll sub out the installation probably. Matter of fact, I'm sure.
John, listen to me. I went to Lowe's. They deal with ARS. ARS is the one I'm dealing with. ARS is the one I'm dealing with.
It doesn't matter. The point is, if you went to Lowe's and made the purchase, then Lowe's is the one you'd be going after, not the subcontractor, because if Lowe's deals...
No, Lowe's is nowhere to be found.
Well, then you didn't make the purchase through Lowe's. You didn't go to the contract through Lowe's. You went somewhere else. You went through these people direct.
Lowe's uses...
They do not have a monopoly on these businesses, but they're building a conglomerate. There's no doubt, and there's nothing illegal to build a conglomerate. People could become millionaires. They become billionaires from this. Sounds like they're buying something up. Look, when I was contracting in the very beginning early, I used to go down to this place that sold the roofing, and they sold the siding. I've always bought my roofing and siding from there. And if things were a little slow, I'd go down to their window and pull a ticket as a subcontractor, because they were selling also as a contractor, just like Home Depot would and Lowe's or anyone else. This supplier was selling the materials and also offering the installation, and they'd subcontract out to local contractors. I, as a local contractor, would pick up a ticket from them to go out and make the install. They'd make the delivery.
It's not the same anymore.
Of course it's the same. It's just not with this company.
What happens is those local companies are now shell companies. They're fronts.
You're telling me that they bought the whole world up. That's not possible. They didn't do that.
Not the whole world, but what they of course, concentrate in dense areas.
It doesn't matter. They're not the only one. I'm telling you, there's lots of contractors out there. There are people that, I see these signs all the time on a vehicle here or there. Well, not all the time, but from time to time. Siding and roofing are us. I mean, I've seen those words too. You'll find someone that's specializing in certain things, doors, windows, garage doors, and so on. You're going to find all kinds of contractors. You're going to find all kinds of people.
Have you bought any major home improvement?
Done anything wrong. I was a contractor for, 35, 40 years. I was a contractor and a construction manager. That's how I made my living.
Have you bought any major home improvement in the last, say, eight years?
I wouldn't, because I do everything myself. Any repairs or anything, if I do a roof, I do the roof. I don't pay anybody to go out and do it. I'll take my son and go do it. You see, but I'm talking about on here where I live, or anything I own or whatever. But the thing is it doesn't matter. There's plenty of people out there. I know lots of subcontractors. I know a guy right now. He's asking me to help him, and I'm going to work with him to do some estimating for him. He's got siding.
The other aspect of this is, labor is scarce, especially skilled labor. So what happens is when they buy up these companies, skilled labor goes to work for them because, they're going to have a better deal.
All of this is irrelevant to your case anyway. Just go through the process that you'd set up, do the right way, and move on. If you end up at the end, you could possibly get a judge that says, I want them to respond, okay, or go into discovery, okay? So fine, move for discovery. And just all you do is put the same thing. You know how to do discovery. You put the questions out in such a way that when they answer it, they trap themselves. You trap them.
No, I would not. I'm telling you, these are big, huge companies. There's no way that I can go up against them.
Right,
at that point, I will have to have a lawyer.
Okay.
And that concerns me too, because...
if that's what's got to happen, then that's what's going to happen. I will tell you right now, at this moment in time, you're becoming your own worst enemy. And let me tell you, you have said that you have some experience in the court. You said that you can file the papers yourself. I don't know why you would think this is such a big case. It's a very simple open and shut case. It's a slam dunk from my perspective. But the moment you say, I can't do it, you see, I truly believe, to a certain degree, of course, of mind over matter. Anything I have set my mind to do all my life, I've done it. I decided to become I decided on the low end as contracting, and I decided to become a general contractor. I was going to do it. I decided that I was going to be a construction manager. I bought books. I learned. I did it. I decided I was going to know the law and understand the government process and how to have government by consent and all the books that I've written. You know, all of that is self-education because I decided I can do it and I'm going to do it. You fail here and you fail there. Failing is good because it's called the school of hard knocks. So if you've had enough education of a school of hard knocks, this is a simple, simple case. It's already won. And even
it should be a simple case, but you know what happens when you get to court.
Look, I can't spend too much more time. There's other people in the queue, but right now I want to move on. But I just want to make this point. I'll give you a final moment. Look, you've already got everything done. Even if you have to go in, you take everything you got and put it into discovery. They have to respond. And whatever they don't respond to, okay, that means they acquiesced. Then you move for summary judgment. Okay,
I will say this. I'm doubtful that I can. Here's the problem. I probably can't even find an attorney in Virginia because it has to be state specific. Because I canceled the contract, I'm not under arbitration.
And so,
that puts me in regular court.
Your negative has put you into a negative position, and that's not good. You always have to have.
You can't find a lawyer that will do these cases.
This is a simple cut and dry case. There's nothing to this case. You've already.
It should be.
Yes, so you won it on paper. If the judge says, I want to give them 30 days, then you write your paper and you admit and deny paper. That's what you write. It's part of discovery, admit and deny. Usually if you're going into a court case and you're filing papers with inside that court case said you're going to have a section called admit and deny, you automatically would do that. So you put the papers together and you send them an admit and deny paper. And now they have to answer. Whatever they don't answer, they acquiesce to. Whatever they do answer, because you have the facts, you have the proof, okay, look, they're just going to deal with you at that point. They're not going to spend the money to put people into court, okay? Once you file those papers in the court, they're going to deal with you, okay? And if they don't, I'm sure you'll get your summary judgment. But with that, I'm going to move to the next person, okay?
Okay.
We'll talk another time maybe, but just make your move.
Yes.
Do what you got to do.
Thank you. Thank you for all the insight. And I'll take, what you said into consideration.
You put a lot of aggravation on yourself. And with the negativity, that's a problem. You could never think negative on anything. You got to think.
I just know what I'm dealing with. I know the wizard behind the curtain. I know who it is.
You presume you know. Lawyers love to just play games. They don't even think you know what the next thing to do is because you haven't responded in such a long time, and they're just pulling you along. And eventually,
they're not lawyers. They're corporations. They're these private equity companies with entire departments of lawyers. That's what they have.
I understand. They have lawyers behind them. They have a legal department. And they would, at a company as big as you're saying, they would have a legal department. And they're the ones that's going to...
Absolutely.
But they're not going to go to bring it into court. It's not worth for them to do it because they'll know that they're going to lose. You've already proven they're going to lose. Well, I don't understand your position anymore. If you think in negative, then you don't believe in the case you built. I've listened to the case.
Well, let me tell you this. They never come and remove the system. Never. They never do. Out of hundreds of thousands of cases, they never come and remove the system.
Well, I have to think about that because you're going to want to write that into the case somewhere and make the point.
Someone said,
I would give them X amount of days to come and remove this system, or I will have a contract to come and remove it for me, and you will forfeit that. I don't know that that is even lawful to do, but you need to do something. You need to look into that, okay? And that's
someone said, like in the case of the solar panels, someone said they would have to pay more to remove it than what it's worth, what the equipment or whatever.
You end up with the system that's already in there, and you can't take that system to make it work. You'll find a contractor who will come in and take it away and even give you a few bucks for it. I'm telling you, that's a fact. If you, how much did they charge you for the system?
$13,000.
Okay, so if you called the contractor and said, look, I got a system in here, I want it removed, it's brand new, it's not being used, whatever the case may be, blah, 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 blah. Okay, if you want to come and take this system out, come take a look at it and give me $1,000 for it and it's all yours. Okay, they may come and say, hey, we'll give you $600. Sold.
I'm concerned about doing that because then they can say that I tampered with the system.
Right, well, that's what you got to wait until a certain point. That's what I just said. You have to look in to see what the law would allow in this, okay? Let me think about this. You see, you can't go and put a lien on them, a mechanics lien, because nothing has been paid. Or has anything been paid? Because we spoke about this a lot.
Yes, I have something that says that the installer was paid.
Okay, you see, now you got...
I remember now,
and I told you other things way back then, you got a better case, okay, now, because they now have a situation where they've been paid for this by a... that's why they want...
Oh, and they do it all the time. They haul off...
Harmless, so that
they
when you...
Go, listen, they go and pay them before the system is even installed. In a lot of cases.
Right. Well, again, I told you how that works. I was a contractor. I told you exactly how that works. And there was fraud there. And I would bring that up. Did you put that into your notice and demand that there was fraud here?
Not yet.
You should have put it into that. You need to add that in now. It's part of your case.
Okay. We were time pressured to get this default notice out.
It only takes...
We're going to analyze the other documents, the contracts, and the other documents.
Okay. So
that would probably be one of the things to look at.
You went in without counting your army and your forces to decide what you're going to win and if you can win and how you're going to win. That was part of the thing. I remember talking to you about that. That's fraud. You should have made mention to that on your notice and demand. And let me tell you something. If you put that in there and had that in the beginning, these people may have already come and taken this out of your home and dealt with this problem. But again, there's a lot of aggravation and stress, so maybe you want to sue for money too. But that's a whole new story.
I'm looking at the third year of not having an HVAC system.
Okay.
The third year, going into
you
the
have
third
a heating
year.
System, though.
Yeah.
Okay, if you don't have a cooling system.
I have an air conditioner sitting out there, but I shut those, the day that I canceled the contract, I shut them off, and I haven't used them since.
Okay, but if you want to use
them. I'm not going to because...
All right, well, whatever you want to do on that. I'll tell you, you should have put that fraud part into there because now it's a bigger issue. And you could have been looking for money on this, and I told you back then because I recall now.
Well, the ChatGPT did bring up.
Find out.
See, technically, I don't know who has been paid. I really don't.
Look, listen to me, okay? That's because you didn't ask the right questions, and I told you the questions right back then. Whoever put that money out, which was a loan, okay, you should have contacted them. Find out how much there was given to these people and what the check was made out for.
That's in the default. It's in there. It asks them the status of all this.
Okay, and the fact that that someone's been paid and that this, you see, you should have called those people and asked whose names was on the check. I want a copy of the check.
I forget the terminology that it put, the words it put it into, but it does, it covers that.
Covers what?
It covers the asking, you know, who's been paid, what's the status of it, and all this.
Check. It's a two-party check, okay? I used to run the system myself with people and set up the loans for them through a guy that I used to know, and it's a two-party check. And whenever I did business with someone who went through the process and they got the loans, it's a two-party check. It doesn't come to one person. It doesn't come to – sometimes they'll give it just to the owner. That's a possibility. But they can't give it to the contractor. If they're going to give it to the contractor, they got to give it in a two-party check. Your signature has to be on that. Okay.
Nobody told me about a permit.
Okay, let me finish the point, then I'm moving on, because I've been trying to move on for quite some time, and we keep going to another thing, and we do repeat a lot of things.
But yeah, that's fine. We can just
if they got a check with two party names on it, and they signed that check and cashed that check by putting your signature on it, it's over for these people. It's over for them. It's jail time. It's fraud, okay? And you could use that, or could have used that, as leverage. You need to go find that check.
They didn't even involve me in the permit.
I just told you. You need to go find that check, okay? You keep going off. The most important thing is the check. And you, if there's no permit, and there should have been a permit, then you need to go down to the and it depends on where you're at. You know, I if I were to install an air conditioning system, I install a lot of air, essential airs, okay? And up where I live, in the counties that I live, don't even need permits for that. You just go make the install. You don't need no inspections or anything, okay?
Well, I was shocked. What? I didn't think I needed a permit for this.
Okay.
But
what?
I got a notice on it.
Some places you do. If I was to go down to the local city down here, to Poughkeepsie, let's say, or to go down into Beacon, or to go over into Newburgh, or to go into Kingston, okay, in any of those cities, I would need a permit to install this, okay?
What I got was a notice that the permit had expired. And I'm like, what permit? What are they talking about?
They got a permit then.
I guess.
Yeah, that's it. Go get information on that, or if you got a notice, then send that notice as proof of a permit that had been pulled. I got to go, okay? We'll talk. You got to get some more information. Do something, and we'll talk.
All right. Okay.
Okay. We'll take. You're welcome. We'll take Ron from, looks like, Maryland. You got the mic, Ron.
Are you there?
I'm here. You're here.
Okay. I just thought that was a heck of a discussion. But anyway. Okay, you brought up something about sending fraud through the mail for starters, okay?
Right.
In other words, the all caps name. So I want to cover a few things here. Of course, we're going to go back to two United States, which you already know. You got a corporate socialist United States, and you also have a republic of the United States. And that
right.
is, the corporate has to do with the Queen of England, or the England. Okay,
right.
So they managed to get in there with Jekyll Island and all the rest of the goodies. Okay,
right.
So anyways, all right, this envelope and enclosures were received at our dwelling today, but upon opening it, we discovered we had opened something else's mail. It became immediately clear that this communication was intended for a fictitious person. It is a federal crime, see law below, when someone commits mail fraud, so therefore we cannot accept this letter from you. Now, this involves, any contract, whether it be real estate, personal property tax, even, federal income tax also. So anyways, so I'll finish this, and then I'll give you the two, and then I'm going to go into something else. It is a federal offense for you to send mail to a fictitious person or fictitious address, or for those you send it to receive mail that is... sent to a fictitious person or address. Okay, so, but anyways, all right, so it says there are no fictitious or legal persons that live here by the name of da-da-da-da-da, nor do we have any idea. Therefore, we are returning this communication to you so you may send it to the things for which it is intended. Now, okay.
Well, but let me ask you a question. So you received this mail, and the mail that came in, was it made out to you but used all caps?
Was in all caps, that's correct. And
but it was made out to your name, but improperly put together with caps.
Well, I got something to cover on caps, too, okay?
Yeah, I understand that. I know exactly what you'd be saying on that. But the point I'm trying to say, though, is the mail did come to your name, and it was spelled correctly, and your address, which was proper, but they put all caps, so you're making a position concerning that letter with the caps.
That's correct.
Okay. And your position, and so you know what's in that letter, but you're rejecting it because they send it to you in caps, and you're not admitting that you are a person, let's say, a person as defined as in USC 26.
That's correct, because that's why I brought up the socialist corporation.
And did this come from the government agency, like the IRS or something of that nature, or did it come from a company?
I've had quite a few different things going on, you know. So, but anyways, let me finish up this real quick. Yes, it did. You know, one of them was IRS, you know, and the other one we could just do personal property.
Now, I would be very careful with IRS. You can beat IRS just by answering their letters, okay? And I can give you some ideas on that that might be in a situation that you can use. But
I already got it all covered. You know, I took a course out. It had to do with the UCC, okay?
But there's a better way to deal with it, okay? But in any event, where are we moving from here? What's your question or what's your point?
Moving from here, Title 18, United States Code, Crimes and Criminal Procedures, Chapter 63, Mail Fraud, okay? Mm-hmm. And it carries, 5 years and a fine or both. And then you have Section 1341, Frauds and Swindles, okay? And that carries 20 years or both with a fine. Okay, now that's that one. Now here comes another one, which I have done, okay, with the Recorder of Deeds. And this one here is really a good one because I was in court and I had taken a witness, you know, and I had sent a certified letter in making sure that they had received this document, you know, and I happen to know the particular court clerk. And I had asked, did you receive my affidavit of trademark and copyright and waiver for tort in my all caps name? And she said, let me see. So she looked around, you know, and said, yes, we did. You know, I said, good. You know, so now the judge comes in, okay, and I know she heard what I had just asked, all right. So I was being, sued or something, you know, by a bank, all right. And I had rebutted four lawyers, okay, proceeded to threaten them with a lawsuit, okay, which they backed off. So here comes this lady, and she says, well, it's been 360 or 330 days or something like that. And she said, we're going to go ahead and postpone. I said, no, you're not. I said, the Constitution guarantees me a quick and, you know, and fair trial. I said, and now we're into almost a year here. I said, I have a copyright on my name. Someone's already in violation of $1 million lawsuit, which would be the bank, because they loaned money fraudulently to me, you know, and now you want to, postpone this case here, you know, and I said, and I believe you're in violation of my old copyright's name, too. I want this case dismissed. And she said,
Let me ask you, is the case about an IRS situation?
No, this is not a case on IRS.
Okay. Is it a case that for foreclosure?
No, it was not that either.
Okay. Well, what kind of case is it, so I can understand? Because
I don't know. It was a loan or something that I challenged. Okay.
Then you received a personal loan for buying a house or something or a car or
you know what? It's been so long ago that I'm trying to do here is if you have this copyright trademark name, okay, in a corporate court. And so, in other words, when you go in, of course, you don't consent to the proceedings.
You do know you're not going to acknowledge all this, right? Because they're evil.
I'm sorry?
You do know that they're not going to acknowledge anything you're saying because they're evil. I'm not saying that you're wrong because you're not, okay? But I'm going to tell you, first of all, the general people don't understand anything you're talking about, generally speaking, okay? So that's problematic on the one hand because they'll treat it as being nuts, and even though they may know it's not nuts, okay, and they may know the truth, but the status quo, let's say, of the people's mindset or just the general way things have been moving and being done over the past 50, 60 or plus years, all of that put together, they're just going to railroad you. That's what's going to happen.
No, I'm not going to, you know, argue that point.
Yeah, I'm just saying they're not going to recognize anything you have to say. I always try to do it from another perspective. If it was an IRS case, for instance, I answered the IRS letter. If they are coming out, I demand a notice and demand on it, which has to be notarized. They're not going to give you a notarized notice and demand. There's a form 56, and if you're going to want to know fiduciary authority, who's got the fiduciary authority over you? Who made the reports? Okay, so where's the fiduciary? They got to prove fiduciary authority. So there's two affidavits that they have to put forward if it was an IRS case. So that's sort of an example of a way to deal with the IRS. And I've been going, 20 years I've been going back and forth with the IRS. 20 years. I answer every letter they send. And they always come back, oh, we need more time, and give us another 90 days after it's been 60 or 90 days already. And next thing you know, I don't hear from them for a year or two, and then they come back and they start the whole thing all over again. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. Okay. And it gets to the point where I sued them, and I won. I got a release of lien. Why? Why did I get a release of lien? Why did I get an apology letter? Because I took them to court to end the whole matter. They didn't take me to court, so I was not in a tax court. I was in a court of law, or a civil law court, like I said. It should be a court of law. Okay, it was in a federal court, okay, but it was not the tax court in the federal building. It was in a regular federal court. And my position, I came in and I sued them for the two papers that they have. And when I was in court, I rose those two papers up and said, they have not given me these two papers. And I demand them to be done. You know, this whole thing is fraud. See, that's fraud. And I've done it on paper, by letters, and going over and over and over again with them. So when I finally took them into court, I only went to one hearing, just one hearing. Okay, and then we went through some different things and were given 30 days to file another paper. I said, I'll file it in two. No, you got 30. No, I'm going to file it in two. Turned out there was some kind of a game they were playing with that too. But in any event, and I don't remember what that was, but there was a time thing on it. But in any event, I filed my papers, and within 2 weeks after that, that's when I got a letter from the IRS. It was an apology letter saying I wasn't liable for taxes and a release of lien. Okay, and I've got those two forms, and I won by using their own paperwork. But if you go through the process what you're going through, and again, I'm not saying you're wrong on this, because I understand exactly what you're talking about. When I came in to understand a lot of these things, I went through that process of understanding, and I was even making positions from that perspective. But you don't get anywhere, because they just railroad you. They ignore you. You're crazy. You look crazy to other people, and they just play along with that, and they maintain the status quo, and eventually they get you, and they either put you in jail or they take your things, and they do both, okay? But that's the IRS. I'm just using that as an example, okay?
Okay.
So now you have another kind of a case that you might be able to find the same thing. Let's take a mortgage situation, for instance. Okay, that whole thing is a fraud because that money came from the Fed window. Didn't come from a bank. Okay, that bank is charging you all kinds. The bank is only they're the ones that make the deal with you. That's all they are. Okay, they set the loan up. They get their point or half a point or 2 points or whatever the deal may be, depending on the size of the loan and so on and so forth. So once they get their points, they're out of there. There's no meeting of minds between you and the bank. And that money came from the Fed window. And now you fall into another thing, that you fall into something else with monies that's actually due you from birth and all that other craziness that they've written up, which they've never acknowledged, and they never pay off on it. They make the claim, which was done many, many years ago, okay? So I'm trying to think what they call that. It's been a long time since I thought about that money. You may know what I'm talking about. But in any event, you got to look for the weak points, and you got to push for affidavit. And you got to push the forms. They need to have. If they don't have an affidavit of claim, they have nothing on you. But if you don't make that point clear in court and on your paperwork,
yeah,
doesn't mean anything. They're just going to push along and railroad you.
Well, see, there's something. You know, this is a federal case right here, because if you take that in, all right, and you challenge that the judge, and you don't consent, okay. And you know what corporation the judge represents? It's in all caps. He knows he's
They're not going to deal with it through
federal court. I would. Okay.
Let me tell you what I do. And whenever I go into court, I try to look like them as much as possible. Okay, but then, of course, I reveal myself a lot of things because I push on natural law, common law, courts of record, you know, all that language, trial by jury. But the thing is I make myself, I don't bring up the stuff you're bringing up. I did in the past think or note that with those ways, but it doesn't go anywhere. But you can make your case. And remember, if you move into federal court, what points would you bring up in federal court? You'd bring up mail fraud. Okay, that's one thing you'd bring up. What else would you bring up?
I would bring in the all caps.
See, that I'd leave alone, I suggest, but what else would you bring up now?
Well, before I would get in there, I would be filing criminal complaints against the judge. I would set up a case, you know.
You'll not get a prosecutor that will file that criminal case. You won't get a sheriff that will file that criminal case.
I'm not part of the court.
But in order to get a criminal case going, you got to go see a grand jury, okay? And I know an individual. In order to get a criminal case, you got to get a grand jury indictment.
Now that's another one. But in any case, you know, I did this. You know, I've been in the recorder of deeds so good, you know, that the gal knows me, you know, by name.
But they're not going to acknowledge that. I'm telling you, the courts are not going to, they're just going to ignore it.
Well, you know, I understand that because I had a piece of property, you know, that they literally stole from me. And I'm going to take somebody to federal court, okay, because I'm going to be writing criminal complaints. You know, so I want to bring one other thing up here.
If they took the property for mortgage foreclosure, which would be a bank, or usually a group of lawyers that do that because they buy all these mortgage things.
But the court overrode everything, okay? What I'm trying to tell you is that
if they took your property for taxes or they took it for a mortgage foreclosure, tax foreclosure or mortgage foreclosure, yeah, they took your property without due process. That's a case you can win. Due process is the key on that.
That's what I would see. I had a land patent. I had UCCs.
You don't even need a land patent. You don't need any of those things. All you need to do is denial of due process. You took my property, and you have a right to a court of law under the Seventh Amendment. You have a right to have a trial by jury, and you didn't receive that, and they just took your property. They just railroaded. You see, that's the case. That's a case you win in federal court.
I never went to court. I did it all certified letters.
But they took your property, right?
Anyways, the other thing is, I want to just leave everybody know that they should not just, you know, leave the court run roughshod over them. They need, you know, if they filed their all caps, that's a violation right there, okay? But, you know, the courts, their abuse of power, They do it all the time, and I got to agree with you. Believe me, I've been railroaded a couple of times myself, and so have you. You know, but I mean to file criminal complaints against the judge, the prosecuting attorney.
Who's going to get that before the grand jury? You think a prosecutor is going to take that to the grand jury? Do you think a sheriff or a coroner? Well, the coroner is at least because there's no death. But do you think the sheriff is going to bring it before a grand jury?
I'm trying to make
a point. They're not going to let you see a grand jury, which, again, is a violation of law also. You have an unalienable right to see that, a grand jury, for good cause. I mean, not just for any crazy meaning, but for good cause, you have a right. And you're usually a jury would say, hey, let's listen. What do you got to say? But you're not going to get to them. They'll put you in jail before they do that, and they'll get you for stalking the grand jury. I'm telling you, I know somebody who went to jail for stalking a grand jury because they were pushing it. They wanted to get to that grand jury, and this was a retired police officer.
All right, here's one for you. In order for evil to reign, it takes a good man to be silent. So all of your, people that are on, listening, if you don't stand up and start taking a stand, like standing, status and standing, documents that you really need when you go into court, there are ways of getting around this, even with the most stern judges, but you got to be really sharp, and I'm not that sharp to do that. But in any case, filing a criminal complaint against a judge, the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, the Governor of the state, at least do something.
They're not going to do that. But and you're right. People need to do things, and they're not doing it. They complain. They want. They yell. They get angry. But then they don't do nothing. They don't get up to get an education. They don't get up to support the movements of people that are doing things. They don't create committees of safety. They don't learn how to exercise their unalienable right of govern by consent. This is a major problem. But again, if you want to go after a judge, if they stepped outside of their authority, you only have to prove that they stepped outside of the authority. You have a right to make a lawsuit and sue them directly, okay? Once they step outside their authority, you can sue them. And now you're not going to push a criminal action on them because no bar attorney is going to go and put file anything criminal act against a judge, even if it's righteous. Okay, they're not going to do it because they protect their own. You know the game. You know the problem. They're evil.
Totally, or pretty much so. Absolutely. Well, anyways, no, that was a nice conversation. I just wanted to run that by some of the people.
Yeah.
Because at one time when I went in there, and I brought up the all caps name, that's a lawsuit.
I agree 100%, but you're not going to get anywhere with it. I agree with you. And I'll tell you what. I want to tell you what. If we can win in court, which we've been struggling for years to get our courts of justice open, that's what our presentment was all about, that we filed and all this paperwork going back and forth, to get our courts of justice back. If we get our courts of justice back, you can then go into court with the positions and the points you're making and potentially could win that case. Because they have no choice at that point. If we can push a court of justice back where the people decide, where they can't deny you, you can get them. But right now, in the environment we're living in right now, I'd be very careful. You poke that hornet's nest enough times, and they're going to say, we had enough with you. And they're going to do something, and you're going to lose, okay? So you got to be real, real careful. I am very careful when I go into the court, I'm very careful that I'm not going to be found in contempt, because even though they're not supposed to find a person who's not a lawyer in contempt because of an argument of positions, they could do that with lawyers, but they can't do that with the people. Of course, they can find you for contempt if you get up and yelled at the judge and curse them or whatever, something crazy. Yeah, they can find you in contempt. But if you're argumentative and you're being argumentative with the judge, telling them that, that they don't have the power, the authority to make these arguments, it's the other side, or whatever the case may be, and you make your legal position, if a lawyer did that, they'd find them in contempt. If I do that, they're not supposed to. I did a case for a friend of mine, Okay, he's passed now, but we couldn't win his case, but he passed before we finished it, and it was a very, very powerful case, and I might be able to resurrect it for his family. But the thing is that I got to a point and I said, well, look, we can say this and say that, but they may go after you for contempt. He said, I don't care, we'll do it anyway. I said, you sure? You know, you never know what these judges are going to do. No, we'll do it. So I wrote the papers and we pushed the issue, and it was written pushing for a writ of error. And we made the point, even though, and we argued with the judge on this. And for that argument, the judge found him in contempt. Now, he didn't know that someone else was writing his papers. And he said, look, you seem to be an educated person, even though you don't have any kind of a license to come here and practice law. Nevertheless, here you are. But because you have knowledge and we can see that you understand what's going on, you're in contempt. And that was against the law. But you ain't going to win against that. So the contempt, I think it was $600.
You know? All right. Here's one last thing, and you got a perfect example coming up right here, and it's Irwin Schiff.
Yes, I knew it was Irwin Schiff.
Not in my court.
Yep.
That's what the judge said.
I have that on audio. Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay. Every time he made a constitutional issue, the judge kept going because he was in a tax court. That's the one thing that Schiff didn't understand, that point, because it's a facade. It looks like a federal court. He thought he was in a federal court, just happened to be qualified as a tax court. But it was a no court at all. It had no power, no authority. It was just a facade. And that's why I won my case against them, because I wasn't in their facade court. Before they were able to take me into court, I sued them. The moment I received that notice of lien, which did not exist, and if you receive a notice of lien, you go down to the federal building within your district, and you go down to the clerk, and you ask for a copy of that. They'll go look for it, and they say, there is no lien here. Because for them to have a notice of lien, there has to be a lien in the federal court within your district. Then they make notification to this is the game they play. They make notification to the clerk in your county and file the lien. It's called a notice of lien, and that's a fraud. It doesn't exist, and that also was part of the case that I won, is the fact that that did not exist, and that was fraud. So there were 3 points in my case that I was able to win on. And I moved very quickly, because once they put that lien on me, okay, I had to do something with the bank. We had to file with the banks. They better not touch my money, and I'm giving serving notice on that. And then I immediately filed a court case before they can file a court case against me, so that I would be in a court of law, which isn't a court of law anyway anymore, but they think it is. So in the civil law courts, I'm there instead of the tax court, so they couldn't pull the shenanigans on me that they would pull me in tax court and railroad me. And so those are that 4 points altogether, making that move that way, okay? So 4 points is what won my case, and they settled with me that way. And now I was looking for money. I was looking for big money, but I thought to myself, I'm not going to poke the hornet's nest. I'm not going to stick a stick back in there. I won my position. I got the release of lien. I got them saying I'm not liable for taxes. And an apology letter, I didn't need the money. I was a happy camper with that, you know. Right. If I would have pushed for money, maybe I would have found other problems.
Hmm. Well, look, I appreciate it, okay? I appreciate your time.
All right, well, good conversation. Appreciate your time, too. Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. All right, with that, we're way over time. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Before we leave, one more time, I just want to make note, again, we'll be sending out an email very shortly this week, and it'll also be mentioned again in the Monday night, on a Sunday, on a newsletter that goes out on Sunday night, or Sunday anyway, that we are going to be considering an indictment on a court, the Supreme Court clerk, okay, for twice denying our papers. We read that earlier today. Our papers are up on the front page. You can read under presentment to SCOTUS. The cover letter, the ones you got to read is the cover letter to the clerk, the cover, and the indictment against the U.S. Supreme Court clerks. And also, I'm going to be posting up here, there's 2 short letters that they responded to. So you need to look at those papers, read through them. We read through them today, so you can actually go to Rumble tomorrow morning or something, or to YouTube and look up and play this recording of tonight's Monday night hearing, And you can get that information being read to you, or you can read it yourself and be prepared to make a decision for an indictment or no. We'll be meeting here in this room on Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the purpose of an indictment against the clerk. So again, be ready. There's no conversation to be made. We're going to look. Everyone gets to look at the evidence and make a decision. That simple. So we do need enough people in order to do this. We hope that a lot of people will show up, we hope to get an indictment. We'll see what happens. But it's up to the people. And this is an important thing, this indictment. And we'll send copies to Trump. We copy everything to Trump anyway in his administration and a few, you know, congressmen and senators. And we got a new attorney general. We'll be filing our indictment with that attorney general for a demand for action, and so on. But we can't file that without getting an indictment. So we need people to show up for this indictment. And again, I'll mention it again. We don't take names. This is all, it's against the law to release the names of people on a grand jury. Okay, so we're not going to give names to anyone. It's against the law for anyone to ask for them. Even a judge, they can't even ask for the names. It's against the law. Okay, so nobody has anything to worry about, their names or anything. Sometimes people are frightened and things that they don't need to be frightened. You know, the enemy is on the run, okay? They got bigger problems to deal with than us, much, much bigger problems, okay? And besides that, the only people that's aware of this indictment will be the Trump administration and a few choice senators and congressmen and, of course, the attorney general, who is all part of Trump's administration. They're not going to come out and deal any problems or seek anything. You know, and we've been filing papers with them for years now. We filed hundreds of indictments already. Unfortunately, you know, it went under... and maybe they acted on some of those. I don't know, because there's a lot of sealed indictments out there anyway. But we filed with Session, we filed with Barr, and now we're going to file with this new branch, Attorney General Blanche. And hopefully it'll go somewhere. You know, and again, we're not only putting the United States Supreme Court on notice, we're putting even the President of the United States on notice in a very nice and polite way and laying it out. And I think next week I'll read that letter. That letter is available. Cover letter to Trump administration is available on our front page. So you can read that. That's the first letter we sent out. The second letter, which will be going out, we'll post that up also. And that's a four-page letter. It's a pretty powerful paper, and it does put Trump on notice also that this is also a notice to the president. Because the law requires when you discover subversion, okay, treason, that it is you are required by law, under natural law and by statute, to report that to some judge or the president of the United States or a governor, okay? You have to report it to one of the three. We're reporting it to two of the three. You know, we're not reporting anything to, especially our governor, forget about that. Anyway, people should show up, look at the paperwork, come up, make a decision. It'll probably be 10 minutes. We'll be in and out of there. And it's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time again. And then we'll have our regular 9 o'clock call after that. All right, with that, good night, everybody. And we'll be posting. I'll probably post these tonight's meeting up tonight so people can go listen to the first part of that if they want, if they missed it, to hear it being read out. So, all right, again, good night. Thanks.